Well, last night, the glass was half empty for Lakeland. A 4-1 defeat left a sour taste in the Tigers' mouths. Today, Lakeland looks to spoil the fun dressed in oat milk. It's game two of a 3-game set between the Dunedin Blue Jays and the Malma Oat Milkers here at Publix Field at Joker Marchant Stadium in beautiful Lakeland, Florida. Hi, everybody. Welcome into the broadcast booth. Joe Puccio with you, as always. And if you're wondering who the heck are the Malma Oat Milkers, well, it's the Lakeland Flying Tigers dressed in special pink-accented uniforms. In a sponsorship with Oatly and Minor League Baseball, each of the 120 Minor League Baseball teams will play one game as the Oat Milkers. And today is the lucky day for the Lakeland Flying Tigers, so they will not be wearing the traditional home uniforms. They'll be wearing special uniforms, and we'll talk about those as we move on here during today's broadcast. So don't be confused if I'm talking about the Oat Milkers. They're just the Flying Tigers. We'll use them interchangeably all through the night, and hopefully it won't be as confusing as it is for me as it is for you at home. Now, one other note to say before we get into today's game is that we are beginning this game in a rain delay. There is no rain currently on the field, but there is lightning within a 5-mile radius. So the tarp has been put on the field. The grounds crew is expecting that there's going to be rain in the area here very soon. We do not have a start time for today's game, but it will not begin at 6 o'clock p.m. So stick with us for the rain delay coverage, as that was thunder. I don't know if you could hear that, but that was pretty loud rumblings from right behind the stadium. So good call to put the tarp on the field and get everyone out of the field of play and get fans into the concourse. So right now we are in a rain delay, and we'll let you know when this game will begin. Now, if you look at yesterday's game, which is a 4-1 win for the Dunedin Blue Jays, it was a Blue Jays dominant from start to finish. The offense for Dunedin came alive in the middle of the game, but the pitching shut the door for Lakeland, against Lakeland for the remainder of the game. The Flying Tigers are held to just one run on six hits, an RBI single from Sammy Heal in the fourth inning. And other than that, it was just Dunedin playing all nine innings, really clean, solid baseball as the thunder and lightning continue to roll in. Some young fans are screaming off in the distance. They're all right, by the way. But Lakeland could not muster any offense towards the end of the game. And there was an obscure finish to the game as well. Kevin McGonigal was at the plate, a pass ball. John Peck on base didn't hustle back to first base in time, and Dunedin picked him off to end the game. So the Blue Jays improved to 12-9 in the second half. They leapfrog Lakeland, who is now 12-10. So Dunedin's in second place. Lakeland is in third place in the West Division. So this series is heavily important for the playoff picture and for the future second half standing. So we'll see who can come away with the tiebreaker through the remainder of this series. Today's game, again, in a rain delay, so we'll figure out when that first pitch is happening. We'll tell you right here on the Flying Tigers Baseball Network. But also tomorrow, a Sunday 12 noon first pitch between Lakeland and Dunedin will also have huge implications on the playoff picture. So as we continue to move along here on the Flying Tigers pregame show, let's hear from Lakeland manager Andrew Graham. We discussed yesterday's game, got into some strategy talk, and we talked generally about the Flying Tigers up to this point. So, as the Malma Oat Milkers and the Dunedin Blue Jays await to play some baseball, let's hear from the Flying Tigers manager. Here is Andrew Graham. Getting ready for a Saturday contest between the Dunedin Blue Jays and the Lakeland Flying Tigers. Today, Lakeland dresses as the Malma Oat Milkers and tries to even up the series against Dunedin. Before we get to first pitch, Joe Puccio here with Lakeland manager Andrew Graham. Andrew, how you doing?
Doing well. How you doing, Joe?
I'm doing well. So what was your takeaway from yesterday's loss?
It's just one of those games. They had some timely hitting, a lot of two-out RBIs. They came up big in the fifth inning of Minton's start with a two-out bases-loaded line drive to center field that was just out of the reach of Max Clark. They scored two runs, and then later in the game, they found a way to hit a couple of triples and come up with that big two-out knock to extend their lead. Offensively, we didn't have too many opportunities. We hit the ball hard at times, but right at their defense, and, you know, it's just one of those games.
In the ninth inning, you guys had a little bit of momentum, but Kevin McGonigal at the plate in the final play of the game. John Peck on the box score says he gets caught stealing. But from your perspective, what was that last play like?
Yeah, so obviously, and these players all know this, that you don't want to make an out on the basis when you're not, you know, you don't mean anything to the score. We're down three runs. It was a wild pitch that the catcher caught, and he was just caught in too much no man's land and got back picked at first base. Should never be in that situation. Obviously, we have signs, and the signs was we are not running. If the ball gets to the backstop, then you can advance 90 feet. But he got over-aggressive and got caught in no man's land. The catcher made a good play, back picked him, and he was caught in a rundown to end the game, which should never happen.
Did John Peck believe that it was a foul ball? It almost looked like there was some body language there insinuating that the play had been stopped.
I don't think so. I mean, Kevin, I talked to Kevin. It wasn't a foul ball at all. It didn't hit him. I asked the umpire to check just in case, but there was no foul ball there. It was just a mistake made on the bases, which can't happen at this level.
Yeah, so I saw you talk to the umpires, and during that game, I thought to myself up in the press box, well, there's no replay review, so what is Andrew Graham talking to those umpires about? So what were you talking with those umpires about?
Yeah, I just said, hey, someone's saying it's foul ball. Did you get a foul ball? And he goes, no. And I said, can you ask your partner? And he goes, well, he doesn't really have a good angle. And I said, I'm just asking you nicely to go ask him. He went and asked him. They said no foul ball, and that was the end of the game. So may as well try. If it's a foul ball then, we still got first base, you know. Peck's not out, obviously, and we still got life. And if McGonagall walks on the next one, it brings up Max Clark to home run, ties the game. So you never know what can happen.
In conversations earlier this season, we've discussed how you've gotten calls actually overturned that way. How does that really happen?
Obviously, you've just got to go out there with a calm mind. You can't go out there yelling at the umpires. But it just comes with experience, knowing when to ask the umpires to overturn plays. With a two-man crew, sometimes the umpire who is not making the decision has a better angle of the play, especially on like a tag play at first base where the throw drags the first baseman off the base and he does like a sweep tag. The guy out in the infield sometimes can't see the separation between the runner and the glove, but the guy at home plate has a better angle too. The guy at home plate also has a better angle to see if the foot is taken off the base at first base by a throw rather than the guy out in the middle of the infield doesn't have that depth perception. So it's good to know those plays and just go out there and ask them to get help from their partner, and hopefully the umpires oblige and they do it. That's when it can be a little frustrating when they say, no, I've got it, when they should on those plays always ask for help.
Joe Puccio getting some insight here with Lakeland manager Andrew Graham. So you discussed how it was a battle of the starting pitchers yesterday. Dunedin got to Hayden Minton in the fifth inning. What's the difference offensively going up against a starting pitcher and then going up against a reliever middle of the game, which you may not expect to see?
Yeah, so like relief pitchers, obviously they come in and it could be one inning, one plus innings, two innings. So you never really see them a second time in the lineup. That's why starting pitchers have to have more than like two pitches or three or four pitch mix and command their stuff better, because you're gonna go through the lineup two to three times. So guys are gonna make the adjustments to see you. So this starter did a good job. I mean, he kept us off balance. I thought we were gonna score some runs off him. I really did. I didn't see too much stuff overpowering from what he had, but. You know, first game back after 4 days as well. The bats were a little flat, so hopefully today we can come back out and get the offense going a little more.
Andrew Sears, the starting pitcher for Lakeland today. In his last 10 innings, he's got 7 combined strikeouts. When Andrew Sears is on, what do you like the most about his pitching?
I like his tempo, works quickly, controls the running game, and when he's commanding the zone, he gets a lot of punch outs. So he does at times use too many pitches. He tries to nibble at times, especially in the 2-2 count. So we spoke to him last week about that. I like 2-2 count. I want him to be more aggressive and not chasing the punch out, but chase contact. But does a good job holding the runners. And, yeah, his tempo is amazing.
So you mentioned that conversation just a couple weeks ago. Have you seen him in those two strike counts be more aggressive?
Yeah, the first three 2-2 counts against St. Lucie, he threw fastballs and got outs, recorded outs on him. So sometimes you need success to happen instantly for these guys to buy in on it, and it worked for him, so hopefully the trend continues. If he threw fastballs then in 2-2 counts, or he attacked with a different pitch in a 2-2 count rather than slider and they got base hits, then he's going to go back to what he does, which was tending to a lot of pitches and walks.
Joe Puccio wrapping up here with Lakeland manager Andrew Graham on the Flying Tigers pregame show. Yesterday, you talked about how you wanted your defense to step up. Two errors yesterday, and I want to ask you, how much of a defense is physical versus mental?
Yeah, most of it is mental with prep, anticipating the ball hit to you, being on time with our pre-step. Both errors yesterday were, you know, Minson's one was on a pick play to second base. He threw it away. That was a throwing error. And the other error was a tough one on Jose De La Cruz. Line drive, hard hit line drive in the right center gap. And he went to backhand it, but it kind of skimmed across the wet grass and came off his glove. I mean, it was hit that hard. It's a tough for him to cut that ball off, in my opinion. So they gave him an error for it, and that's the way it was scored. But, you know, it was a tough error. So not much we could do there. Maybe take a deeper route to get behind the ball a little more. Jose could have done that. But other than that, you know, it's a mental thing, in my opinion. We work hard enough on the physical, and when they're mentally engaged on their early work, they don't really make the error. So it's in the game. It's the speed of the game. It's the pressure of the game. It's taking your offense to your defense, and it's just not being ready on time.
You ready to wear the Oat Milkers jersey today?
Yeah, why not? We don't get too many jerseys to wear here, so you might as well change it up.
All right, so the Malmö Oat Milkers as the Lakeland Flying Tigers battle the Dunedin Blue Jays here on this Saturday. Andrew Graham, thanks for the time.
No problem. Thank you.
And thank you always to Andrew Graham for joining us here on the Flying Tigers pregame show. Joe Puccio back with you here in the broadcast booth. Interesting to hear him talk about Andrew Sears, the starting pitcher today for Lakeland. And the thing that he likes the most about Sears when he's on is his tempo. And we've talked about it every time Sears has been on the mound this year. He is a quick pitcher. He hardly allows the hitters to get comfortable in the batter's box. And that tempo has worked out over the last couple of starts. In his previous two starts, he's pitched five innings each time, which is the traditional maximum for Lakeland pitchers so far this year. And if you look at the numbers, he has seven strikeouts, three walks. And in his last three starts, he has 10 strikeouts and six walks. His last start against St. Lucie was really dominant. In a 5-0 win over the Mets, Sears threw five innings, gave up three hits, and no runs. And he's been one of the top pitchers in the second half this year for the Flying Tigers. So perhaps we'll see Andrew Sears on the mound. Right now, we're in the middle of a rain delay. No rain on the field just yet, but we have seen some lightning strikes very, very close to the ballpark, and there are some dark clouds off in the distance, so we're expecting some rain to hit here in Lakeland anytime soon. It's because the Dunedin Blue Jays are in town. Every time that Dunedin plays Lakeland, there has to be some sort of weather-related craziness to go on, and so I blame everyone on the Blue Jays for that. Not literally, of course, but we'll see. We'll see what happens here as we continue here on the Flying Tigers pregame show. First pitch to be determined here in game two of this three-game set between Dunedin and Lakeland. We'll continue with more pregame coverage after this right here on the Flying Tigers Baseball Network. Hey there, folks. Joe Puccio back with you here in the broadcast booth. If you're just joining us here on the Flying Tigers Baseball Network, we are in a rain delay. There hasn't been a drop of rain on the field yet, but there are some dark clouds off in the distance. We've had lightning strikes in the area. Kind of a scary thought with all this thunder rolling around. But we are still waiting for first pitch here between Lakeland and Dunedin. No set time just yet. First pitch was supposed to be at 6 o'clock, but right now it's 6:06, and there's no baseball, and we don't know when there will be baseball as of yet. But stay right here on the Flying Tigers Baseball Network, because we have a very special guest joining us now. Not here in person, but at a pre-recorded interview on the Tigers Extra Innings podcast. If you aren't subscribed to the Tigers Extra Innings podcast, I don't know what you're doing. You got to do it right now, because there are some great interviews from around the Tigers organization done by all of the Tigers broadcasters. I want to share a conversation that I had with MLB Hall of Famer and longtime Tiger Alan Trammell. He's number 3, retired by Detroit, but right now he is the special advisor to the general manager. And Alan Trammell spent some time down here in Lakeland getting to mentor some of the Flying Tigers and, most specifically, the Complex League Tigers. And so while he was down here in Lakeland, he stepped aside for a minute to chat with me about his current role, his playing career in Detroit, and some of his thoughts on the young, as he calls, baby Tigers here in the organization. So let's hear from the man himself. Here is Alan Trammell on the Tigers Extra Innings podcast. Welcome to the Tigers Extra Innings podcast. Joe Puccio here, the broadcaster for the Lakeland Flying Tigers, here with a very special guest. Currently, he's the special assistant to the general manager, but Tigers fans probably know him as simply Alan Trammell. Tram, thanks for joining us here.
Well, it's my pleasure, Joe, and it's good to be down here. And as I kind of say, some of our baby Tigers growing their teeth, and hopefully some of these young men will be in Detroit in the near future.
So we're currently taping this down here in Lakeland in late June. You've been around the Flying Tigers for a while now. We'll start with what you've seen from Lakeland and with some of the other affiliate teams. What have you seen from the, as you say, baby Tigers?
Well, I really believe that we're heading in the right direction. I mean, and with that being said, you're always going to be looking for more talent. Obviously, coming up is the 2024 draft, and the cycle will repeat itself because that's just the way it works, and new Tigers will be coming in. But in the meantime, the ones that we have, and really over the last couple of years, I do think that we're heading in the right direction. In particular, here in Lakeland, I think that we've had, you know, Andrew Graham and his staff have done a tremendous job. You've been seeing them since day one, or you've seen them since day one, and the job that they've done, starting with the pitching. We've gotten some quality arms there, and I'm going to tell you a secret. You're going to have to keep this a secret.
Oh, keep it on the down low here.
The number one component in baseball always has and always will be is pitching. Mm. So, and I think as an organization from the top, that's what we've been trying to do is develop that pitching first. And then obviously you need the position players as well. But I think that we're a little further ahead with the pitching and then with the position players that we have now and hopefully in the near future, we'll start adding to the kind of the nest. And I know people want me to say names, and so I'll give you a couple of names. But again, you don't want to leave anybody out because you just never know in this business. It's such a difficult game, and especially to hit. But, you know, the two, Max Clark and Kevin McConaughey, are two at the forefront that have deserved the praise. They play, they play hard. They do a lot of the intangible things that I look at. I'm not just, we all want to just talk about the hitting part. But there's really a lot more to the game of baseball than other than just hitting. And that's such a high volatile thing where you're the up and down, kind of like the Dow Jones. But the other part, the defense and the base running, those are things that you can bring more and be more consistent at. And so we're trying to stress that, or at least I am. And I know others, instructors in our organization, are trying to preach that as well. And we're just trying to get well-rounded baseball players.
So it's funny that you say the pitching is the most important thing. This is coming from a second baseman of all people. And then you mentioned Kevin McGonigal's name. Right now, here in late June, he's the fourth prospect in Detroit's organization. Let's start with him. What have you liked from his game?
Well, what I like, and I think what we all like, not just myself, is what he brings again to the table. The attitude, the energy, the eyes, when you look at him in the eyes, it's the want. You know, he wants to be a major leaguer, and I'm not saying that some of them don't, because they all do, but you can just see a little different gleam, and he's wired a little bit differently than some of the other young men that we have. And so to me, that's an intangible, that's a plus, a big plus. Again, he's got a long way to go, like they all do. I mean, we're here in Lakeland. This is lower A. But the fact of the matter is, from what we've seen and what we've all seen, is we see a fine player that does a lot of different things. Again, the aggressiveness, he runs the bases. He's played shortstop very well, both second and short. And then again, he's one of the top hitters in the Florida State League.
You also mentioned Max Clark, third overall pick from last year. I think Tigers fans are ready to see him very, very soon up in Michigan. But from when he got to this organization, what kind of impact do you think he's made?
I think he's made an excellent impact, and there's a lot of pressure on Max. I mean, you know, coming in, he was one of the top guys on the board and got a lot of attention. And with that attention is a lot of eyes on you. And overall, I think he's done a fine job. Again, nobody else in the organization has the eyes on him like Max Clark does. So that's something that he has to handle. He's going to have to deal with that. I think he's done a great job. He's a fine young man, as you've talked to him numerous times. He wants it extremely, he wants it as well as the rest of them. And he's also got talent. So number one, it comes with talent. And then just going out there on a daily basis, he's had his ups and downs. But if I'm not mistaken, as we speak today, he's leading the Florida State League in RBIs and also runs scored. So there's a lot of pluses. And he does bring the intensity with the defense and the base running on a daily basis. So we're very pleased with Max's progress as well.
Yeah, we're taping this on June 29th, and Max has 43 runs batted in through just over half a season here in single A baseball. So you mentioned how what we see is X, Y, and Z from McGonigal, Clark, and others. Mm-hmm. So just let's break it down from a simple term. Like, what is your job here with this front office?
Well, what my job is just to evaluate. And obviously, if I'm allowed to say something. but again, the protocol is, we go through the coaching, the progression. You go to the coaches or the managers, and if I have a suggestion, we'll do it together. I mean, I can talk baseball at any time, and I think that's something that I'm pretty good at. I've got some experience in that. I think I can relate.
And maybe a couple of years.
A couple. So I think I still can relate to the younger players, even though it's been a long time since I actually played. But I've been involved in baseball since the day I retired. I've really been kind of doing coaching or this kind of role really since the time I retired. So I'm still very active. I'm up to date with who's playing and what's going on. But I'm allowed to say and voice my opinion. But when I report to Scott Harris and Jeff Greenberg, excuse me, and to Ryan Garko. And they kind of, I give them a little report on what I've seen wherever I go. And so when I'm done with this trip, that I'll give them my little report on what I see. Doesn't mean that I'm right, wrong, or indifferent, but I'm just another set of eyes and ears. And I think that's just the best way for me to describe my role is I enjoy it. First of all, I appreciate the Tigers and Scott Harris allowing me to be a part. But, again, I can say this as an older person, it still keeps me young at heart, to be able to, tag along and watch these young players. And again, I really still enjoy giving back, and I think it's what I kind of call passing the torch. So all I'm trying to do is help in any way that I can.
That is wonderful. And we'll definitely get to your playing career in a moment here. But since Lakeland isn't the only level that you've made your trips to, have you seen any common threads between the affiliate teams?
Yeah. I go from Detroit all the way here to the FCL, which obviously this week I was able to double dip a little bit and see the Flying Tigers, but also see the FCL baby Tigers. So again, it's just something, again, as I'm repeating myself, I enjoy it. I really enjoy really working with the kids, number one, but I also like going up to Detroit and seeing the speed of the game. And so it kind of reminds you why guys are at different levels. There's a reason. And for the most part, you can kind of handpick some of the guys that you might think might be on the, you know, getting that call to possibly move up. This is what they all want. Mm-hmm. They all want to get to Detroit. But there's a process to all of this. So, you know, again, I like where we're at, but I will also tell you that we need more. And again, coming up to this draft. So when you look at a whole team, then you start to kind of see where some of the holes are. Nobody in anybody's organization has, from top to bottom, has 25 players or 27 or whatever it may be, like just surefire guys. That's not the way it works. So you're always, again, trying to add, and as we are. But I can tell you that doing this kind of role in 10 years now, it's the best group of players that we have in the 10 years that I've been doing this role.
So you said that everyone wants to get up to Detroit, mm-hmm. and you got up to Detroit in 1977 with your rookie season. So let's talk about that time before you got to Detroit. What was your minor league experience like?
Well, it was very short, to be honest with you, and I'm not I'm very thankful mm-hmm. that they handpicked a few of us, and I was one of those guys. They kind of fast-tracked us, and I look back now, and people say, well, hopefully that they don't get rushed. Well, I'm glad they rushed me because I was able to at least keep my foot in the door and continue to get better. And with that being said, I always have to include my partner, Lou Whitaker, who from the first day that I got into professional baseball, you know, we hooked up very shortly thereafter. And then we played my only full year in the minor leagues. And then when we got called up from Double A to the big leagues, we came up the same day, made our major league debut the same day. And then I actually played one more year than Lou, and I look back and I'm not quite sure why, because I was kind of banged up my 20th year. But Lou and I played 19 years together. We're both very, very proud that we're the longest running double play combination in the history of baseball. And my goal is for Lou to be in the Hall of Fame alongside myself. That would be the ultimate. And I do believe it will happen, but it's taken a little longer, but the wait is worth it. And I know Lou would love to be alongside of myself. But again, going back to the short time in the minor leagues, I played rookie ball and Double A and went to the big leagues at 19 years old, was called to the big leagues. So again, it happened very, very fast for me. I happened to do well enough for them to say, well, maybe let's give him a chance, and Lou. And again, we got our foot in the door, and all those years later, we did okay, to say the least.
So you get up to Detroit in 1977 right. with Lou, right. and it only happened in a year. Did that learning continue when you got up to Tiger Stadium?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if we weren't with the organization that we were, the Detroit Tigers, we weren't that good. So the opportunity was there. I want to be perfectly honest. If we were with another organization that was doing better at the major league level, they wouldn't have done that. But again, I'm very thankful they did, because we started the process. We started to learn. And this is a learning process from whatever level you're at. And obviously at the big league level is the best. So here we are, 19 and 20 years old, Tram and Lou, getting a regular position in the major league. So obviously there was a lot to learn, and the difference in the speed of the game and just all the little things that come about. But the one thing that we could do, and the reason why we were able to stay in the big leagues initially, is because we could play defense. We understood how important that was, going back to our childhood and our youthful days, how we were taught. And then when we got into professional baseball, they could see that we were a little further ahead. They wouldn't have, obviously they gave us an opportunity, but they don't just hand you jobs. You know, this is the major leagues. So they felt strongly enough that we could handle our own with that and get better with the bat. And that's exactly what we did.
So when was the first time you got here to Lakeland?
The next spring training in 1977, going prior to the year that we went to the Southern League, which is our Double A affiliate, was Montgomery, Alabama, the Montgomery Rebels. That's where Lou and I played together. But we had hooked up at the end of the 76 season, the year that I was drafted. Lou had been drafted the previous year. excuse me, and he played down here in the 1976 year season in the Florida State League under a manager that's going in the Hall of Fame here very shortly in Jim Leland. And then when the season was over, I hadn't met Lou yet. We went to the Instructional League over in St. Petersburg, and that's the first time I met Lou Whitaker. Now, I'll give you a little more of a story about how this came about. Lou Whitaker, playing for Jim Leland, was the Florida State MVP in 1976. We go to Instructional League. The first day that we get there, they say, Lou, you're going to move to second.
And this is when he was 19, right?
Yes, yeah. He was 19. I was 18. And he's just the MVP of the league, and they switch him to second. Now, if I was the MVP of the league, I might have said something. I know deep down he was wondering what the heck. But I just think ultimately they looked at the size, and we both were very skinny, and Lou wasn't the prototype third baseman size-wise. So they thought, well, maybe this might work. Maybe Lou and Tram playing short and second might work out. Nobody knew it was going to work out the way that it did, but they gave it a shot. And lo and behold, it worked out, and we were together from that day on.
And so going back to Lakeland, right, you spent many a spring training down here. Is there anything that has been similar from your first experience to when you're walking around the clubhouse in 2024?
Well, the things that are similar is where the ballpark sits. I mean, it's right here. So I was showing some of our younger players a book that Lance Parrish, it just got Enchanted Season, which is going back to the 1984 season that we had. And ultimately, that's been our last world championship. But it shows a picture of Lance Parrish, Lou Whitaker, myself, and Chet Lemon. That's the old saying, the old cliche about being strong up the middle, catcher, second, short, and center field. Well, that's the cover of the book. And then it's just a story about the entire 1984 season, but that's the cover of the book. Pretty cool. Again, we played right here. They've done some renovations. They've obviously upgraded the facilities, which obviously needed to be. I mean, you know, we're talking about going back into the mid-70s. So, again, there's some things that have happened. But, again, it's right here on the same grounds. So I've been coming here for many, many years. I still enjoy it. Lakeland has gotten much bigger. It's not a big city, but obviously bigger than what it was when I first started coming down here. And I just enjoy it, even though I'm a San Diegan. I'm from California, but I enjoyed coming to Florida. It's a little hotter and more humid around here. But nevertheless, man, it's great baseball weather, great people. And I just enjoyed, and I'm still enjoying my time here in Lakeland.
Let's talk about 1984, mm-hmm. World Series MVP for you. That was when the American League had the Yankees and Kansas City at the top, and then you guys win the World Series in 1984. Yeah. What was your biggest memory from that year?
Well, winning the World Championship.
Sure, that'll
this
work.
This is what we all strive. I mean, when you talk to the young players right here, that's what they want to win. They want to do. They want to win a World Championship. Again, it's easy to say, it's harder to do, and we found that out after that dream. You know, you couldn't have scripted it any better, Joe, in 1984. I mean, from start to finish, we started off 35-5. The best 40-game start in baseball history. We won our first 17 games in a row on the road, which is American League record as well. And we were able just to sustain and ride that wave longer than, you know, normal, and we just had the confidence. It didn't matter who we played that year, at least in our mind. I mean, not trying to be cocky and boastful, but you have to have confidence in yourself. You can imagine what kind of a 35-5 start would do for your confidence and for the whole group. And we were able to ride that wave and be able to carry it on and win a world championship. But we found out the next year, just because we won didn't mean they were going to lay over. We were in the American League East, and at that time, you could argue that it was from top to bottom the toughest division in baseball. I would say that definitely that was the case. So, you know, the next year we had to go battle, and we were good, but we just weren't good enough.
Joe Puccio here with you live here on the Flying Tigers Baseball Network. We'll continue our chat with Alan Trammell in just a moment, but I just wanted to update you with the current weather situation. If you're watching on MILB.TV, you see it right now. It is a monsoon here in Lakeland. The tarp was put on just before 6 o'clock when there was no rain in sight, and that was a great move because now the rain is coming down in bunches. Dark clouds right over the playing surface. The warning track starting to puddle up. On top of each dugout, there is just extensive amounts of water. So we will wait out this rain delay here. Right now, we have no official start time for today's game, but it is raining heavily here in Lakeland. So we'll continue to update you as news comes along here on the Flying Tigers Baseball Network. But for the next 8 minutes or so, we'll continue our conversation with Hall of Famer Alan Trammell on the Tigers Extra Innings podcast. You can listen to this podcast episode wherever you get your podcasts. Tigers Extra Innings is the search. And this episode is Alan Trammell making progress. So let's continue listening to the Hall of Famer, Alan Trammell.
You mentioned the confidence point. Is that something you're trying to teach these minor leaguers?
Yeah, and that's a tricky, because that's a tricky question. Yes, you are, but the only way, and this is what makes baseball such a difficult game, is, again, there's so much failure. And you really don't know about any of these players. And again, so they come from college, they come from high school, where they've pretty much been the star. And the failure is not going to be like it is at any professional level. So you have to find out about guys when they're failed. How do they respond? And that's a tough one. Some handle it better than others. Some are so ticked off and they're motivated to get better and improve. Others, unfortunately, aren't able to handle it. And you know what happens with them? I'm sorry to say, they get weeded out. And that's just the way the cycle is. That's how difficult, you know, professional sports are. But baseball in particular, because, again, you just fail so darn often. So, again, those are kinds of things that, again, as an evaluator, I'm trying to pick their brains a little bit and try to find out really what makes them tick. But, again, you really don't know until they do hit a little bit of the failure. I didn't say rock bottom. Maybe something. Right. But, again, when they go through these little skids, especially as position players, hitting-wise, that everybody that plays professional ball is going to go through.
And is that something that you also learned when you were managing the Tigers in the early 2000s?
Well, I mean, yes, because now I had already played a long period of time and I've already seen some things. And the old saying about you've never seen it all, that's true. There's no question. But you know quite a bit. And so when I was, you know, given that opportunity to help, and that's really when I got the opportunity to come back, you know, we weren't very good. We knew we weren't going to be very good. Nobody envisioned us losing 119 games. But you know what? We stood up. We were accountable. And if I'm not mistaken, in 3 years' time, that group that lost all those games made it to the World Series. Now, they didn't win. But in 3 years, they went from 119 losses to a World Series, being in the World Series. That's pretty good. So I give the players credit. And I give my coaching staff a lot of credit for, you know, grinding it out and implementing some things that we all know worked. They didn't immediately work because, again, baseball is such a hard and tedious game. But we laid some groundwork, and we feel proud of that.
Speaking of managers, you said his name earlier, but Jim Leland's going to the Hall of Fame. What just me saying that sentence, what does that mean to you?
Well, it's a no-brainer. And so he is so humbled by the fact that that he's going into the Hall of Fame, but it's well deserved. And whether or not he goes in and he's chosen not to wear a hat because he doesn't want to offend anybody, that's okay.
Yeah.
We all know that he's deserving. He's a Tiger. He's a Pirate. You know, I know he won a championship with the Marlins. That's fine. He's a baseball guy. And I just think back so fondly of the of him, Jim, being in the organization when I came. He was never actually my manager, but when we were in that instructional league in 1976, he was actually one of the coaches. So we bonded for a few months, and obviously our relationship over the years, because we've crossed paths so many times. But it's well deserved. I can't wait to hear his speech. I know he's nervous. He's told me that. Everybody that gets inducted into the Hall of Fame, it's one of the most, you know, as far as getting up there and making that speech, is not easy. Most people aren't very comfortable doing that. But like any, he'll be very well prepared. He'll do a great job, and I can't wait to hear him.
I was going to say, we've had conversations before about how the speech is probably the most difficult part of the whole thing.
It is. I mean, every player will tell you the exact same thing about that. And it's not so much for the cameras and the people out in front of you. It's for the guys behind you that have been there and have gone through the same thing. And just, you know, you just don't want to let them down. But it's the ultimate. I mean, obviously winning a world championship from the team, is that's what you first set out to do. I don't think too many young men, when they're growing up, you know, they think about making it to the major leagues and hopefully winning a world championship. They're not thinking about the Hall of Fame. That's just kind of a what happens if you play a long period of time and do, you know, very, very well. But Jim Leland as a manager did very, very well for a long period of time. Again, we're all very proud of him.
I could sit down and chat with you for an hour and a half about anything, but the last question I have for you, with the Tigers right now in their spot in the American League Central, a lot of high draft picks making their way through, what should Tigers fans know about the minor leagues right now and with the state of the organization in terms of looking at the minor leagues?
Well, I know some people are going to listen to this and go, he's crazy, and maybe I am. But the fact of the matter is that we're on the right track. Again, are we there yet? Absolutely not. I'm not going to try to deceive anybody and tell you that, you know, we're right there. We're not. But we have made a lot of strides. Again, in the 10 years that I've been here, we've kind of broken some things down, and now we have a new system in place. And I know people, you know, I'm going to tell you, hey, be patient. I'm not real patient myself, but I do understand the process that baseball, again, you don't just draft somebody like you do in the NBA and the NFL and plug them right in. That doesn't happen in baseball. I'm hoping that people can understand that it's just a little more difficult as far as the way that baseball is played and to be able to plug it. They need to play some minor league games, get at bats, get innings under their belt before they're going to be established major league players. And that's just the way it is.
And that's great for you, too, because you get to teach them all, right?
Well, that's right. So, again, it keeps an older man. I don't like to use old, even though I am. I'm still young at heart. And, again, I really appreciate the fact that the Tigers allow me to be a part of this, because it keeps me sane. I know my wife will tell you sometimes she enjoys when I get out for a couple weeks, because she knows how much I love the game. I always have and always will.
And you know, during batting practice and stuff, I always see you shagging balls out in center field. Like, yeah, you're young at heart, right?
I'm young at heart. I don't move around very well with some of the ailments that I've had. But I still like to, you know, stay active and do my thing. And again, I just enjoy being around the young guys.
Well, Tram, thank you so much for joining us, special assistant to the general manager. I know we'll have many conversations off the air as we move forward here, but thank you for joining us here on the Tigers Extra Inning Podcast.
It's been my pleasure, Joe.
What an episode with Alan Trammell. What a conversation, right? And the one thing that really sticks out about that conversation, and especially relevant this weekend, is what he said about Jim Leland, manager of the Detroit Tigers, also a manager with the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Florida Marlins. But tomorrow, Jim Leland enters the Hall of Fame. That all of a sudden comes tomorrow. And just to hear what he said about, hey, it's a no-brainer, right? And Jim Leland's touched so many people in the world of baseball, mentored a lot of young players from his playing days and as a manager, and Lakeland is no exception to this. Jim Leland was the manager of the Lakeland Tigers right here at Joker Marchant Stadium from 1976 to 1978. Leland managed the Tigers to back-to-back Florida State League titles in 76 and 77. And Jim Leland, he had an all-time winning percentage here in Lakeland of 57.2. That is the best of any manager in Lakeland history. So Jim Leland, not only will he have his number retired by the Tigers on August 3rd, but he joins the Hall of Fame tomorrow officially. So that is a fun season for Detroit Tigers. Always great to have another member added to the Hall of Fame. And number 10 will be up there, not just at Comerica Park, but just behind the right field pole here at Publix Field, where all the retired numbers are. His number 10 will go right in between Al Kaline and Sparky Anderson. So that should be a fun one, with both the Hall of Fame coming up tomorrow, Hall of Fame induction ceremony, and in a couple weeks when Jim Leland's number 3 heads to the quote-unquote rafters in the Tigers. So, very fun conversation with Alan Trammell, whose number 3 is retired by Detroit. Alan Trammell, a member of the 2018 Hall of Fame as well. And as we sit here through this rain delay, the rain is still falling down. It's not as heavy as it once was, but still coming down in bunches. So we will update you with potential start times for today's game. Again, the game was supposed to start about 35 minutes ago. If you're just joining us here on the Flying Tigers Baseball Network, we've been in a rain delay ever since 5:30. So the thunder rolls in, lightning strikes out in the outfield. We're still weathering the storm, literally and figuratively, here at Publix Field. So don't go anywhere, folks. First pitch to be determined between Dunedin and Lakeland. And by the way, folks, today is Malma Oat Milkers Night. So the Flying Tigers rebrand themselves as the Oat Milkers. They'll be wearing special cow-looking-like jerseys. Should be a fun night of baseball if Mother Nature decides to leave Lakeland. So we'll be right back with more pregame coverage right here on the Flying Tigers Baseball Network.
Thank you.
Hey there, folks. Joe Puccio here on the Flying Tigers Baseball Network. If you're just joining us, we are in the middle of a rain delay. Lightning strikes and rain in the area. Tarp is on the field. Water is puddling up on the infield. It looks like, for the moment, the rain has stopped, but there is lightning in the area, which is a big concern in terms of starting up a baseball game. So right now, we are in the middle of a rain delay, and I just want to go over some of the scheduling ramifications that both Lakeland, Dunedin, and the umpires have to go through as lightning just strikes real close to the ball yard. So because today it was supposed to be a 6 o'clock first pitch that's been in a delay, and there is a 12 noon game tomorrow, let's say this game gets postponed, right? There will not be a doubleheader tomorrow here in Lakeland. And because the Blue Jays do not return to Lakeland for the rest of the regular season, that means that there would be a doubleheader when Lakeland goes to Dunedin in the final week of August. That's August 27th to September 1st. And the Tuesday and the Sunday, there cannot be a doubleheader. So you would be looking at from August 28th to August 31st when there could be a doubleheader between the Flying Tigers and the Blue Jays. So that is sort of how the schedule comes out. There will not be a doubleheader here tomorrow because of it's a travel day for the Blue Jays, so they don't want to make that day longer than it needs to be. So if this game gets postponed due to weather or wet grounds or whatnot, then the doubleheader would be in Dunedin and during the final week of August. That series ends on September 1st. So we don't have a first pitch time just yet. We are still awaiting official word on the resumption of this game. The latest update we had was just a couple minutes ago saying that nothing has changed, and we are still awaiting a potential start time for this game. So if that news comes across, we will share it with you right here on the Flying Tigers Baseball Network. We'll take another break here, and when we come back, we'll talk about the Tigers' 2024 MLB draft class. The draft wrapped up just this past weekend, and there's a couple new names, actually 20 new names, that could be joining the Detroit Tigers organization, and in a couple months, some of those names could be with the Lakeland Flying Tigers. So lots of interesting storylines after the draft, and we'll talk about it right after this here on the Flying Tigers Baseball Network. Hey there, folks. Joe Puccio back with you here in the broadcast booth. And we just got some word. It's not an official update, but it is definitely not optimistic. This is from Zach Burek, the general manager of the Lakeland Flying Tigers. He said it's not looking good to get this one in. Forecast and radar is not looking good. If this game cannot be played, there will most likely be a single game tomorrow, and there will be a doubleheader in Dunedin to make up this game. So about, 10, 15 minutes ago, we did some hypotheticals about when this game would be rescheduled, and our hypotheticals were correct. It's not official that this game is postponed or canceled or anything yet, but it does not look good. If you're just listening, the tarp is currently on the field. It's still raining. It's been raining for about an hour straight at this point. And there is strong thunder and lightning in the area, and it's not going away. So that pushes start time back every time there's a lightning strike. And obviously with a 12 noon game tomorrow, you can't start this game all too late. So we will keep you updated when there's official word. The most recent update that we have is that the managers and umpires will discuss at 7:15. Right now it is 7:10 p.m. So we'll let you know how that one goes. But for now, here on the Flying Tigers pregame show, now an hour long, more than an hour long at this point, let's talk about the 2024 MLB draft that just wrapped up this past weekend. And there is a common thread that you can see over the last couple of draft classes from Scott Harris and the Detroit Tigers. So the first two draft choices this year for Detroit, we'll start with number 11 overall, the first-round pick by Detroit, was Bryce Rainer, a shortstop from Harvard-Westlake High School in Hollywood, California. Rainer coming straight out of high school. And the 49th overall pick, Owen Hall, a right-handed pitcher from Edmund North High School in Oklahoma. So the first two draft choices by the Detroit Tigers this year are high school players. Where have you heard that one before? Well, just last year, right? Max Clark and Kevin McGonigal, the two top prospects in the Tigers organization. Clark number one, McGonigal number four. And both of them have been stars this year in the Florida State League. Max Clark, the league leader in runs batted in with 57. He's played 72 games so far, a batting average of .279. And for McGonigal, just under 60 games, he has the second-best batting average in the Florida State League at .323, and he has the highest OPS of any player, the highest on-base percentage of any player in the Florida State League, and he's the only player above .400 in that category. And so Dan Dickerson, the Tigers radio broadcaster, he was on the call on the TV side of things for Detroit's win over Toronto today, and they discussed the MLB draft class. And Dan Dickerson brought up a point that is really ringing true with a lot of Lakeland Flying Tigers fans. He said that the success of last year's draft class, with Clark and McGonigal at the top, has definitely poured in to the Tigers' draft philosophy for this year. Rainer and Hall going at 11 and 49, two high school players. It goes to show you that there is a clear message. Detroit likes to bring in high schoolers with its top two draft choices, two draft selection slots that have a great chance of signing, right? I mean, the slot value for Bryce Rainer is $5.71 million, and the slot value at number 49 is $1.89 million. Tell that to a high schooler and say no, right? I mean, we would all take a $6 million contract to do whatever jobs we do. So with Rainer and Hall, with the two first draft choices by Detroit this year, both high schoolers, both planning to sign as well, it goes to show you that Detroit wants to bring in these young guys right away, bring them to the complex, and then have them play single-A ball. And if Clark and McGonigal did not have the level of success, the levels of success that they've had so far in their short professional careers, would you and I see the Detroit Tigers taking two high schoolers? Maybe not, right? We maybe see Detroit taking some college guys. And just over the past couple of years, the top-end college players, they have made their way up to the show. I mean, Paul Skeens is the first example of it. The first overall pick in last year's draft by the Pirates. He could win the Cy Young Award this year. Like, he was playing college baseball just over a year ago. Skeens played for the Bradenton Marauders, worked his way up, started the year with the Indianapolis Indians. And in the middle of April, he gets the call-up to Pittsburgh, and he could win the Cy Young along with the Rookie of the Year, and he started for the National League in the All-Star game just this past Tuesday. So we could have seen Detroit go that route. And Wyatt Langford, the fourth overall pick by the Rangers last year, who was drafted one slot after Clark, he's already playing Major League Baseball. Dylan Cruz, who was the second overall pick in front of Max Clark in the 2023 MLB draft by Washington, he's with AAA Rochester, and a lot of Nationals fans are waiting for Dylan Cruz to go from Western New York to the nation's capital. That could happen soon as well. So Detroit not going with those college guys that could be MLB ready. No, they want to go with the high schoolers who can develop. And when you look at what Clark and McGonigle have done this year, it is impressive. And it also is a great sign for the entire 2023 Tigers draft class that includes guys like David Smith, Jim Jarvis, John Peck, who has played substantial time. All three of them have played substantial time with Lakeland this year. It goes to show you that there is a level of trust. There is a level of confidence with these drafted players that, hey, look, we can bring in a guy at any age of any skill set, and if they have the potential to make it to the major leagues, let's bring them here to Detroit, make sure they sign, and then see what happens as they go through the system. So the 2024 MLB draft, emblematic of the 2023 draft for the Tigers, and it could be because of the top two players that Lakeland has fielded this year, Max Clark and Kevin McGonigle. So we will continue to talk about the MLB draft class as we move on throughout the second half of this season. We could see some of those drafted players come up to Lakeland within the next couple of months. If you looked at Max Clark and Kevin McGonigle in particular, two guys that were drafted in the 2023 MLB draft, and they made their Florida State League debuts. Let me just get the numbers correct for you, just so that we could really dive deep into the MLB draft and sort of see how these guys would shape out. Clark made his season debut in 2023. Come on, computer. Come on. I know you can do it. Come on. Come on. Load up. This is what I need you the most. Just to give you a rough estimate, it was in late August, August 24th, the official day that Max Clark made his debut. So perhaps in a month's time, we see guys like Bryce Rainer, Owen Hall, even the third-round pick Ethan Scheifelbein, who is a left-handed pitcher also out of high school from the state of California. Those guys could shuffle their way in to the single-A lineup and rotation towards the end of this Flying Tigers season. And I know what a lot of Tigers fans are saying right now. When is Clark and McGonigle coming up? Well, I wish I had the answer for you. I wish I could tell you. But with guys like Rainer Hall and Scheifelbein potentially coming into single-A ball within a month or a month and a half when Lakeland is making that second-half playoff push, imagine that team with Clark and McGonigle. I mean, you're talking about a superstar MLB pipeline dream class. So at some point here, there's going to be some new guys coming up through the system to add on to that Clark and McGonigle crop. So it'll be very interesting to see. All right, folks, we have an official word on today's game. We are officially postponed. I hate to break the bad news to you, but the weather and the radar not looking great. So this game will be made up, not tomorrow, but will be made up in Dunedin. That series from August 27th to September 1st. So keep an eye on our social media, at LKD Flying Tigers, for the latest. But there will not be a doubleheader tomorrow. Just one game tomorrow. First pitch is at 12 noon, and we'll be on the air at 11:45 in the morning for the Flying Tigers pregame show. So sorry to all the Oat Milkers fans out there, but the Malma Oat Milkers will not be playing a game tonight, at least here in Lakeland. The Oat Milkers are also in Wichita, Kansas today. The Wichita Wind Surge, the AA affiliate of the Minnesota Twins, currently dressing as the Oatmilkers as well. But the Flying Tigers will not get to wear the fun pink uniforms for today's contest. So once again, folks, today's game has been postponed. We thank you for joining us here on the Flying Tigers Baseball Network. Just one game tomorrow on the air at 11:45 in the morning for first pitch at 12 noon. Dunedin and Lakeland will just play two games here this weekend, and then Lakeland will head on the road for six games to face off against the Bradenton Marauders. So, folks, we'll be back on the air tomorrow, 11:45 in the morning. Get your coffee and get your breakfast, because we will have some baseball for you right here on the Flying Tigers Baseball Network with our broadcast engineer, Brandon Walters, and the entire Lakeland Flying Tigers family. I am Joe Puccio, signing off from Publix Field at Joker Marchant Stadium. Today's game between Dunedin and Lakeland has been officially postponed and will be made up as part of a doubleheader in Dunedin between August 27th and September 1st. The Sunday game tomorrow begins at 12 noon. Make sure to join us at 11:45 for the Flying Tigers pregame show. We will see you tomorrow morning.